We're in Genesis 27. Old Shakespeare said, "What a wicked web we weave when first we practice to deceive." And tonight we want to look at some deception in the Bible. In Genesis chapter 27, we have the case of Jacob deceiving his father and getting the blessing that was intended for Esau. Now Jacob has already gotten Esau to sell his birthright, which meant an extra third of their father's large, very substantial wealth was going to be Jacob's instead of Esau's. But that wasn't enough. Now he's going to get a little extra on top of that. Now, the blessing was not, like the birthright, a physical wealth that was received. And we don't really do blessings in our society today much. I've seen a few cases of people doing those kinds of things, but basically the blessing was just that. The father blessing the son, telling the son, sometimes even prophetically telling the son what was going to happen to him in the days to come. But often it was simply the father saying to the son, "I want the best for you. I think you're a wonderful man. I'm proud of what you've grown into, and I want, you know," and those kinds of things, to encourage that son to grow on and live life as they should. Well, verse 1 sets the stage for us. "It came to pass that when Isaac was old, and his eyes were dim so that he could not see." That's probably the most significant portion of this entire chapter. Because if Isaac had been still in the prime of health, if he had still been able to see, if he had still been able to recognize what was happening, the rest of the events in this chapter couldn't have taken place in the way that they did. I heard recently that our eyes, our sight, is responsible for 80% of the knowledge that our brain gathers. 80% of that comes from the things that we see with our eyes. The other 20%, I suppose, would come from touching, smelling, and hearing those things around us, and maybe even tasting them. But it's an amazing thing when you can't see how much you don't know of what goes on around you. And Isaac was in this condition. I'm guessing, based on what happens in the following verses, that when it says his eyes were dim so that he could not see, it really meant that his lights had gone out in his eyes. He was blind. Because even if he could see a little bit, I should think he would be able to tell the difference between a red, hairy man and a man wearing some goat skin on his hands. I would hope, even if he couldn't see real well, he'd be able to tell that difference, especially when Jacob gets close enough to kiss him so that his father can touch him and smell him. But that's not enough. So we look at this. Isaac knows he's getting old. He doesn't know how long he's going to live. You know, he says, "I know not the day of my death," with a few very rare exceptions, some of those being those, of course, who take their own lives. Most of us don't know the day we're going to die. That's not something that's common knowledge. And so it's not surprising that Isaac didn't know when he was going to die. But before he died, he wanted the opportunity to bless his son. And he wanted his son to go. His son, of course, Esau, his favorite, was a hunter. And so he wanted him to go out there. It must have been deer season. He wanted some venison. And so he sent him out. Now, Esau was a bow hunter, I suppose. He was supposed to take his quiver and his bow and go out and get some venison and fix it the way his father liked it. He calls it savory meat. He wanted it seasoned a certain way. He wanted it flavored a certain way. And I'm sure his son, having prepared that for him many times in the past, knew exactly what he was talking about. We would in that similar circumstance have known. And he says, bring it to me so I can eat it, and then my soul may bless you before I die. This is a spiritual blessing. This isn't a physical thing. He's not going to give him any more money. He's not going to give him any more possessions. It's just going to be one soul to another, blessing him. But this carried a lot of weight. This was the idea of the blessing was a big deal. And even throughout the book of Genesis, the idea of a father blessing his son was huge. And that philosophy, that idea, carries over in the New Testament when it talks about God being our Father and it talks about Him blessing us. And we read the Beatitudes that Jesus talks about. Blessed is this person and that person. And He mentions those things that make a person blessed by God, that will make him happy, that will help him to enjoy the benefit of God. And so the idea carries on into the New Testament. But like I said, in our society today, it's been somewhat lost. And fathers don't make the habit of blessing their sons that they did in this culture. One of the many things that we've looked at that's different from the way we do things. It was far different in that time. Well, Rebecca heard it. Now we remember, if we were here the last couple of weeks, that Rebecca's favorite son was Jacob. And so when Rebecca hears that Isaac's going to give the blessing, she wants her favorite son to get the blessing. And so she begins to work on a plan. And she tells Jacob to go out and get one of the kids of the goats and bring it in. And she then was going to make the meat flavored the way her husband liked it. And she was going to help her son that she loved get that blessing. Now remember back to that first verse where Isaac was old. I've heard that at a certain point in life, our taste buds start to not work as well as they did when we were young. And I think Isaac had reached this point. I've had venison, and I've had goat meat. And I can tell you, they don't taste the same. Isaac should have been able to tell the difference in a goat and a deer in the taste of them, in the texture of them. They're different. But perhaps with all the seasonings and spices that would have been used to prepare it, maybe he couldn't tell the difference. Sometimes we can disguise the flavor of something we don't like with enough salt and pepper, especially that cayenne pepper. You put enough of that on there, you can disguise the flavor of just about anything. But such was the case that she thought this would work, and in fact it does. So she tells him, do what I tell you to, obey me. Just do what I tell you to do. Now, it was her plan. It was her idea. Jacob didn't come up with the idea to do this. He didn't even know that his father was going to bless Esau. But don't think by that that we can let Jacob off the hook. He knows about the plan, and he knows what they're doing, and he knows it's not right. He knows what will happen if it fails. In fact, Jacob says to his mother, my brother's a hairy man, and I'm smooth-skinned. And if my father feels me, then he's going to know I'm deceiving him. He's going to be able to tell the difference in my smooth skin and Esau's hairy skin. And he says, I will seem to be a deceiver. Well, of course you'd seem to be a deceiver. That's exactly what you're doing. You're being a deceiver. Sometimes we seem to be what we are. But he says, I would seem to be a deceiver and I'll bring a curse upon me and not a blessing. He knew that this was not one of those situations where it's no big deal. If they get caught at this, he knows his father is not going to just say, oh, well, it's no big deal. That's no, nah, don't worry about it. Everybody wants the blessing, and I can understand why you do that. No, he says, my father, it'll bring a curse down on me if my father figures out what we're doing here. But Rebecca says, let your curse be on me, my son. Only do what I tell you to do. Obey my voice. So he went and he did. She fixed the meat. She took some of Esau's clothes, put them on Jacob. Then she took the skin off of that little goat, that little soft, remember it was a kid of the goats, it was one of the baby goats, and so she took that soft hair on that baby goat, because you know the older goats, their hair is not very soft anymore, but she took that skin off it, put that hair on his hands, and on the back of his neck, where his neck was smooth, where his brother was hairy, and I don't know how she fastened it on there, because she fastened it on there to him somehow, and she put it there. And so then she sent him in. And he went in and he told his father, here I am. And he says, well, who are you? And he says, I'm Esau, your firstborn. Now he knows that's a lie. But he's going ahead with the plan. When we begin to deceive, we get ourselves into all kinds of messes. So he says, come and eat of the venison that I've prepared for you, so that your soul may bless me. And Isaac said, well, how did you get it so quickly? And hunting takes some time. You gotta go get your weapons, you gotta go out there where the animals are, you gotta kill the animal, then you gotta wait for it to show up. And sometimes hunting, you don't get something for days and days sometimes. He said, how'd you get it so quickly? And he said, the Lord your God brought it to me. Oh, that just tickled Isaac's ears. Oh, this is meant to be. Oh, how great this is. I asked him to go kill it so I could bless him. And wow, he's back already. And that's just... And oh, God sent it to him. Oh, because remember, Esau had been the one who married the foreign wives. So, oh, he said, oh, to hear this, these wonderful things that my son is thinking about God. Well, Isaac says, come near so I can feel you, whether you be my son Esau or not. So Jacob went near and he felt him and he said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. Again, coming back to the fact that he couldn't see. If he could have seen, he would have seen right through this. But because he couldn't see, he had this conflict between what he was feeling with his hand and what he was hearing with his ears, and neither one of them were enough to fully persuade him. And so he went with what was told him, that, yes, I'm your son Esau. He asked him again, are you my son Esau? And he said, I am. And he said, bring it near to me and I'll eat of my son's venison that my soul may bless you. And he brought it near him and he ate and he had wine to drink. And his father, Isaac, said, come near and kiss me, my son. Now here's where the deception works again. He's got Esau's clothes on, so guess who he smells like? When he gets close enough that he kissed him, Isaac smells him. And so now when he smells him, he now has his hands, when he touched, telling him that's Esau. He has his nose, when he smelled, telling him that's Esau. He's tasting of the meat, and he thinks it tastes just like I like it. And the only thing that was kind of nagging at him there was the voice just doesn't sound like Esau. But he's got all these other senses telling him this is Esau. And so he accepts Jacob as Esau at this point. And see, you thought that identity theft was a new problem that we have in our society. It's been going on for thousands of years. Jacob, the first case we know of identity theft. And you know, they say, statistically speaking, that most cases of identity theft are someone you know. And many times, it's a family member. And it was in this case. Jacob has stolen Esau's identity. Unfortunately, Esau did not have any sort of identity theft insurance or protection to keep these things from happening to him. He didn't have Visa's no liability policy either. So we have some blessings today that they didn't have back then. But he begins to bless him. He says, "My son, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore God give thee of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone that curses you, and blessed be he that blesses you." Now that blessing is significant. And later on in Jacob's life, we're going to see these things continue to be a part of his life, these blessings that his father bestowed on him. Now I know that Isaac didn't have the power, any kind of miraculous power, to give these blessings to him. But these were blessings that he was giving. And notice what he says in verse 28. "Therefore, let God give you these things." This blessing, in essence, is almost like a prayer to God on behalf of this son that he received the things he's being asked for. And so he had blessed him. And just after Jacob leaves, Esau comes in. And he's also prepared the meat. He did get the venison. And he says, "Father, arise and eat of your son's venison that your soul may bless me." And his father says, "Who are you? My son Esau just came in here. I just ate of it. Who are you?" He says, "I'm your son Esau." And Isaac trembled exceedingly. And he said, "Where is he that's taken venison and brought it to me? And I've eaten it all before you came, and I blessed him, and he'll be blessed." And Esau is disturbed at this point. Esau begins to cry bitterly and say, "Father, bless me, even me also, O my father." And he said, "Your brother came with subtlety and has taken away your blessing." And he said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob?" Remember, his name meant heel grabber, the one that trips people up by snatching at their heels. That's what Jacob's name meant. And he says, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now he has taken away my blessing. Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" What a sad thing it is when a child has no blessing to receive. Here's Esau. He didn't respect his father and the birthright that he was supposed to receive, traded them for a bowl of stew. But now that he's a little older, a little more mature, now that his father's getting closer to death, he's beginning to realize what he's lost. He's beginning to realize what he's giving up. And it's interesting that this blessing seems to be of a greater importance to him than the birthright. And isn't that the way it is with children of all ages so many times? Parents sometimes go out of their way, work extra hours, long overtime, in order to provide their children with money and cars and nice houses and toys and clothes that are nice and all these material things. And the children don't appreciate those things. What the children really miss is the relationship. They miss the spiritual aspect of that parent-child relationship. So many parents lost their children because they so focused on the material things and they forgot the spiritual things. They didn't give them their time and their energy and their love. They thought the things, they thought the money would take the place of them being there. But I've seen children, even the little ones, I've seen how they look when mama or daddy doesn't get to make it to their ball game that they were so excited about. And I've seen how their faces droop when mama or daddy maybe sent a big, big birthday present but couldn't be there at the birthday party with them. It's a big deal. Those things can never take the place in a person's life of their parents and the spiritual blessings that parents can give. Esau is oh so wants his father to bless him. And Isaac says, what can I do? I made him your lord and master. I said all his brethren are going to be his servant. I've given him corn and wine to sustain him. What can I do? And Esau begs, please, just something. Bless me also, my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Verse 39, Isaac finally says, your dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. And by your sword shall you live, and you shall serve your brother. But it'll come to pass when you grow restless that you'll break his yoke from off your neck. That's the best blessing he could offer him is you're not going to have to serve him forever. Eventually you'll throw him off and you'll get to be free. Well, Esau hated Jacob because of this. And some might say, rightfully so. What a tricky guy Jacob was. He said, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. My father's going to die soon. He's old. He's going to die. Then I'm going to kill my brother. So I'm not going to do it while my father's alive. I don't want him to know it. But I'm going to kill my brother after my father's dead. After I mourn for my father, then I'm going to kill my brother. That was his plan. Well, Rebecca found out about it. And she called Jacob and said, your brother is planning to kill you. So here's what I want you to do this time. Flee to my brother Laban who lives in Haran and tarry with him a few days. A few days until your brother's fury turn away. And he'll forget what you've done to him. Then I'll send and fetch you. You know, Rebecca never sent for Jacob. When Jacob left, she never got to see him again in this life. Wonder if it was worth it to her to get that blessing for him from Isaac, but to have to send him away and not to get to see him the rest of her life. I have to think probably not. I know the blessing was a good thing. Nice to get that blessing. But she lost the relationship with the son she loved for the rest of her life. As far as we know, we never read about Rebekah's death. As far as we know, she died sometime while Jacob was gone. When Jacob comes back, he and Esau bury their father a little later on. Much later on, their father lived a good long time after these events. Even though he thought he was old, he kept living for quite a while. Sometimes we think we're older than we really are. We feel old sometimes. He lived for a good long while, but Jacob and Rebekah plotted, looking only at the benefits and not counting the costs of all the things that could go wrong, of all the problems that could be caused. Kind of a sad situation. And of course, the way Rebekah tells it to Isaac is that she's just weary of her life because of the daughters of Heth that Saul had married. Just couldn't stand that he'd married these foreign women. He said, don't let Jacob marry them. I don't want him marrying them. I want him to go back to my home, back to our ancestors' land and country for his wives and to live there. It's an amazing thing. When we start working on deception, look at what danger this proposed. You know, if Rebekah hadn't heard that Esau was planning to kill his brother, if Esau had kept it bottled up inside like some people do, she wouldn't have known it until Jacob turned up dead one day. And all because they wanted to deceive Isaac and get that blessing. And for Jacob, to betray your father's trust. You know, he wasn't his father's favorite to start with. But I'm sure that his father still loved him. Oh, Esau may have been his father's favorite, but his father still loved him. But I wonder what his father's attitude toward him was after these events. As far as we know, Jacob and his father never had any more relationship after this. Even though his father was still alive when he returned, he never talked to his father again, as far as we know. Never had any relationship with him after that. Deceit, lies, hypocrisy, falsehoods, all of those things work together to destroy relationships. What about in your relationships? One person I knew in college during the time that both of us were dating, and I'd see that he would lie to his girlfriend on a regular basis about various different things, and I said something to him about it. He said, oh, I said, you've got to build a relationship on lies. They can't handle the truth. Wow. I wondered if he was ever going to be able to have a relationship under those circumstances. And yet, how many people in our society do that very thing? They try to build relationships on lies, on deceit, on hypocrisy, on pretense. And it doesn't work. And you know, we may fool some of the people some of the time. And you can fool all of the people at some point in time. But you know, you can't fool God any of the time. He sees right through every lie, every deception. He sees right through it. The Bible says that to Him, the darkness shines like midday. You can't hide it from Him. He sees it all. And yet sometimes we still try to deceive Him. All we really accomplish is deceiving ourselves. Are you allowing deception to destroy or damage the relationships you have in your life? Learn the lesson from Jacob and Esau and Isaac and Rebekah. Don't give in to that temptation to deceive. Whatever the benefit or the upside may seem to be, the downside always outweighs it tenfold. Tonight, if you're here and need to respond to God's invitation, perhaps because of some lie, perhaps because of some deception in your life, or maybe it's some other sin in your life that's keeping you from being in the relationship with God that you should have, come to Him and get that straightened out. Don't go another day with that problem in your life. If you're here and need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.